Hi, friends, and welcome again to our continuation of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1. It's called Talks to Disciples, Part 9 of those talks, and it's a video commentary. And today is an important day historically, whenever you may have a chance to listen to this, because 20 years ago today, the World Trade Center suffered that attack, which, with other murky doings, brought down the entire edifice, with many people killed in the process, among them the firemen, the police, the first responders. So it's a day of reminiscence and questioning why this should have happened. It's a much different country now, and far more divided than it seems it ever has been. And we have to learn through the processes of real discipleship how to train ourselves under Master DK's guidance, at least this particular group, and how to help train others in a more receptive attitude to the ageless wisdom. We might call it changing the red into the purple, if we want to speak of symbolic methods. So I said, it's going to be program 44, and a little segue tells us that any delay in progress and any final severance comes entirely from the pupil. The master cannot do that occultly, and because of his love, he will not do that. There may be, he says, a temporary suspension of communication, and this may last throughout one life. That, however, is not long from the angle of the soul, and may we add that that's how DK sees things. From that, sorry, far loftier perspective, which cannot be achieved in the same way by the average disciple. The time sense for the masters is entirely different than the time sense for the seemingly isolated personality, which at times I think we all have. Going on here with DK, one life, okay? It is, he says, but a flash of small moment and significance in the long career of the soul. Well, that career is minimally millions of years old. And for those who were individualized on the moon chain, and even in the previous solar system, that career is a lot longer. Billions of years, in fact. DK tells us that it looms as large and important in the personality life, but may signify only the grasping of opportunity in the eternal now of the soul. And this, let us suggest, the eternal now brings in even higher perspectives than those of what is typically called the causal body or the egoic lotus. There is a sense, even beginning with the soul, of infinite cyclic time. And then as we move higher into the triad and into the monad and liberated monad, that sense of the eternal now gets only stronger. So, may I say, we must begin to alter our perspective so those higher vantage points can be accessed. I think it's fair to say that many of us, and maybe all of us, that sometimes are trapped in a certain confinement of consciousness, which is related to identification with the personality. This is not a condition in which to remain. But it is so common, so customary, that sometimes, no matter what words we speak, that confining identification with a rebellious personality is what we actually experience. The alignment, soul, mind, brain, is difficult to achieve and brings in a kind of perspective which is not customary. So we labor on until such experiences become more commonplace to us, more customary. Our program for today, as I said, program 44, and we're on page 98. And DK says here some touching things about his attentiveness to those whom he has magnetized and who stand, shall we say, at the periphery of his ashram. If you really stop to think of it, it's an unusual thought that someone thousands of miles away in terms of space should be so immediately present in terms of observation. But such are the capacities of a master that kind of observation, which is very close, very detailed, very psychologically astute, that kind of observation can take place. And I do believe, although Master DK was not looking in on everybody all the time, he did have plenty of other work to do, rather than take care of the relatively minor task of looking in on students. He warned them of that, that it is unusual and very different from what we are able to do before we really develop vision, understanding, a certain telepathic connection, which at first we do not have. Long ago, I was a member of a group that tried to reproduce some of the things that Master DK could do along the line of telepathy. Well, maybe one of the participants was more successful than the others, but it proved, actually, in my estimation anyway, to be both difficult and inaccurate. So we have lots of practice remaining before us. Now, what he says here, as I mentioned, well, you judge for yourself. I have, he says, therefore, been near you. May I say, despite the geographical distance, and, he goes on, watched at intervals the tide of life roll over you. And a tide, has these pretty regular cycles and a certain extent that it may reach, a high tide, a low tide. So something of a compelling nature is rolling over the students, and it comes in a measured form. He goes on to say, I have noted your progress and your delay. May I say, he told a student in Australia that due to a recent decision, it would take him 3 lives to recover. Now, that is a significant delay. So, as he says, I have noted your progress and your delay. I have watched you succeed, and I have seen you fail. May I say, we have here a very compassionate understanding and accurately assessing friend who sees a great deal more in our comings and goings, in our augmentations of light and diminutions of light. He sees a lot more than we see, no matter how far away geographically he may be. So he says, I have watched you succeed and I have seen you fail. This I do. Okay, so I'm going to mark at the beginning, because all of us, have we not, experienced periods of progress when even we can note that we are progressing. And other periods of retardation and delay when we fail to apply what we know in the right way and even fail to understand what we should know. So to watch our success and our failures, he says the following. This I do through noting the pulsation of your light, not in watching the detail of your daily living. Okay. It's like the cessation of recollection, and yet memory persists. So he doesn't watch the daily detail. He says, that is not warranted in this time of crisis, may I add, because time and timely response is so important when crises that threaten all of humanity are in process. So watching this detail of daily living, I mean, some of us, may I say, might imagine, ah, the Tibetan is seeing everything I do. I'm reminded of this kind of frivolous Christmas song. You better watch out, you better not shout, and maybe you better not pout. Santa Claus is coming to town. He knows when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. You know, that's like having some great eye over you all the time. Now, I think probably Master DK can do a better job of it than Santa. So anyway, he says, I'm watching you through the pulsation of your light, noting the pulsation of your light, and not watching the detail of your daily living. That is not warranted in this time of crisis, he says. The masters, I might say, were among the busiest of people during the Great War. And I'm thinking particularly of the Second World War, when the possibility of the human experiment nearly came to an end. So there's this special method. That we call, or he calls, noting the pulsation of your light. A master does so much. Of course, he has, in a way, mastered time, as one day we will. So naturally, he can get done in a short period of what we call time, far more than the average disciple. Because it might come up to us that we ask, how can he handle all this? It does seem so very overwhelming. Well, at least it does to me, I must say. Okay. So, let's go on. He says, this is not warranted in a time of crisis, and owing to the evolutionary development of disciples will never again be warranted. This detailed observation, though I must say that because he will be an externalizing master and thereby close to his students, he may note the detail. He may note it, and that may lead to more rapid progress. For those he instructs, he so often tells us, well, we can't do that now, because there's no living teacher on the physical plane with you. But of course, one day there will be. Okay. So we have been evolving all these many millennia and million year periods, and we have succeeded in developing a greater self-control, a greater regulation, a greater management, a better management of our personality vehicles. And because of that, that close observation of the guru, or by the guru, will not be warranted, except in those special circumstances of special training. I mean, I'm thinking about how C.W. Leadbeater was trained by Master Kuthumi in certain psychic abilities. So there, a very close kind of observation would have been needed. There are exceptions. But even though Master DK is not watching, every little act, he says, you are still within my group aura. Within my ashram. Interesting, wouldn't you say? Not just standing on the periphery of, but within my ashram. Your position there, he says, is determined by yourself, not me. There exists, pardon me, there exists at times something which resembles a pulsation in the relation between teacher and pupil, a withdrawing and a coming forward where the probationary disciple is concerned, and a standing with steadfastness and expectancy on the part of the teacher. Further, he says, when the fluctuations of contact are ended and the pupil is stabilized and becomes a steadily approaching point of energy, that's a quote, then he becomes an accepted disciple. Well, perhaps we have wondered how it is that the student makes the grade for acceptance and often recently DK said the truly accepting disciple already is moving into accepted discipleship, and especially if a pledge is made. But here is something important. When these fluctuations of contact, and I might say they're pretty much going to be the responsibility of the student, actually, not so much the responsibility of the teacher. When the fluctuations of contact are ended and the pupil is stabilized and becomes, we might say, anchored, you know, and becomes a steadily approaching point of energy, then he becomes an accepted disciple. Then, according to law, I suppose, and according to the rules, he can become an accepted disciple. Of course, in our studies, we have shown or repeated that too much is made of being an accepted disciple. It can lead, as one of the final tests, to a kind of egotistical response. Oh yes, I'm an accepted disciple, are you? The attention should be given to the accepting and to the pledge and to the service. And then we will see that steadily approaching point of energy. And here I'm just going to outline what Master DK tells us about the behavior of students and the kind of phenomena that appear to be experienced It could be, may I say, it could be experienced as, oh, sometimes the master approaches me, and sometimes he withdraws. But it's much more likely that this is a question of the fluctuations of the student himself, who at length achieves some kind of stability in his orientation. See, this factor of projection is so interesting. We see in others, Master DK tells us, what's really in ourselves, even if not to the same extent. And we sometimes are aggrieved with the so-called behavior of the master, because he seems to come and go at will while we are standing steadily. But that is not true. That is not true. But for so many, at first, there is this pulsation. And you know, in prosaic terms, we have our good days and our bad days. We have our spiritually sensitive days and our rather opaque days, when the master does not seem to be present. But let's look at our own vision and understanding, our own striving, our own tendency to move forward rather than fall back. Now he speaks here of his own group. Even if they were divided into groups of nine, or intended to be so divided, it would still be one big group. He says, some in my group of disciples are stabilizing. Some are retreating. That idea of falling back. Some few are approaching, and I watch with interest. We are being studied, aren't we? Okay. And I watch with interest the waxing and the waning of their light. Always seems that there's kind of a threefold possibility. Go ahead. Preserve the status quo, or fall back. And we all seem to have that kind of choice, if we are only sufficiently conscious of what it means to do each. If we are really anchored spiritually on the physical plane, we can and probably will be seen as an approaching point of energy, of light, of love, of dedicated will. So let us strive to become that, It may seem like a lot of work for a very quick assessment by the master. But remember, he says, I study with interest your comings and goings. And obviously attempts to draw them in during a period of radiation such as the one we are passing through right now. I would not like to be one of those chelas that was retreating from the suggestions that the master offers us. And yet, we've all been through that. I just know it. Okay. He goes on to say, the mobilization of every disciple is demanded at this time. And when I say this time, I refer to the present time and the next 50 years. Well, let's just say that this was written in the quite early 30s. So that would have taken us to 1980s. It was interesting in the 80s that there was a kind of a change toward the more material compared with the 60s and the 70s, when the flood of new consciousness was released. So here this is 90 years ago, 85, 90 years ago, that this is written, and we have to pause and ask of ourselves, are we mobilized? And if so, in what way? These 50-year cycles, they do relate to the second ray. Of course, according to numerical affinity, it could relate also to the fifth ray. So here a 50-year cycle is being emphasized, and we remember that from 1950 to the year 2000, the independence of the fifth ray scientific ashram was curtailed, and its development was placed under the general third ray, because too much was being assimilated too fast. Okay, so what about this mobilization? Because it's good to feel mobilized under the will of the Master. Remember, Master Moria, it is a joy to do the Master's work. It is good to be ready to respond to the need. And we can't do that if we're in some kind of supine position. This mobilization, he says, involves the focusing of the disciples' energies, his time and his resources on behalf of humanity. So, humanity comes first. And the disciple basically gives all he can give and is in a state, we might say, of spiritual high alert. So I'll repeat this sentence. This mobilization involves the focusing of the disciple's energies, his time, and his resources. Some of those, of course, can be financial, and others may be gifts or talents, on behalf of humanity. It requires a new dedication to service, a consecration of the thought life. And then we're asked, do you realize what that would mean, my brothers? If the thought were directed towards things sacred, instead of used in a desultory manner, which anybody could do. So, further with DK, and a forgetfulness of self, which would rule out all moods and feelings, all personality desires, resentments, grievances, and all the pettiness in your relations with your fellow men on the physical plane. It would mean the conditioning of all active outer living so that the whole of life becomes one focused active service. The whole of life. Becomes. Seems a tall order, doesn't it? One focused active service. I would ask you to study the above phrasing, using it as a light of revelation, so that you may know wherein you are lacking and what you have to do. Okay. Okay, so let's go on there. Just a little technical matter I had to deal with. But this is the picture of mobilization. And it is demanding. It requires, he says, a new dedication to service, a consecration of the thought life. Apparently, may I say, our thought life is not sufficiently consecrated. And he asks us, do we realize what that would mean? and a forgetfulness of the of self, and it would be the little self. And can any of us do this? That rule out all moods and feelings, all personality desires, resentments, grievances, and all pettiness in your relation to your fellow men. Well, I suppose if we took this seriously, we would realize how far we fail really to do this. Because which one of us is devoid of moods and feelings of a personality nature and personality desires and resentments, so many, as we disapprove of each other's behavior, grievances, and what DK calls these, all pettiness in relation to your fellow men. All these things are pettinesses. So, mobilization demands all this, and we have to know whether we can do it. So he says, assess yourself, right? What does he say? On the physical plane, it would mean the conditioning of all active outer living so that the whole life becomes one active outer service. So, okay, let's study ourselves and try to find out what is the real, what is the real story with us. Because we cannot go blundering on as if all of these things are accomplished when hardly any of them are. All right, a little more. I have given you, he says, in the past, a very great deal of instruction, help, and encouragement. Can any of us doubt this as we meticulously or with attempted meticulousness go over what he has presented? That, he says, you still have. And it would profit you much if you spent some time recalling it. But today, make a new beginning, not for your own sake, but for the helping of a needy world. Forget yourselves. So that's one of those punctuated statements, isn't it? Forget yourselves. So recall the past, yes, and all that has been given, but make a new beginning today. Seize the day, as it is said, if we but knew how to do it. And why? Make a new beginning, not for your own sake, but for the helping of a needy world. Forget yourselves. May I add, I wonder if we really do realize how needy the world is. I suppose if we spend some time on a garbage heap in an impoverished country whose only source of livelihood and maybe even of food was that garbage heap, we might know more about what a needy world really is. And I might say that these kinds of needs, which arise from so much imbalance, have to be overcome in the Aquarian age. We cannot go on in a situation of extreme riches and extreme poverty, because the entirety of humanity's society will shake apart under such a split. There's so much to do to bring some degree of balance. And the very rich fight it, and the very poor have no power, and, or not that they've discovered anyway, and feel helpless. But in the karmic cycle, the very rich will learn what it's like to be very poor, and maybe vice versa. The problem is there are endowed souls of longer experience and unendowed souls of lesser incarnational experience. And unless the spirit of the Christ, which is compassion and love, can sweep over those who have and who are endowed souls, this split, which is so nauseating, will be maintained. Selfishness, we've all been through it, but selfishness is a very ugly thing. There has to be a way to bring more balance, more love, more real alignment into the picture. There has to be a way. And we think of the needs. Let us not forget the various kinds of needs of a needy world. We could go through every ashramic area and find the needs of a needy world. Politically disadvantaged, blinded and misled, with false teaching, financially deprived, living in ugliness and squalor. Having science prostituted to the welfare of a few, fanaticism which divides, and chaos of the seventh ray. We could go through every ashramic area of responsibility and find where the needs are. We could go through every one of the 10 seed groups and find out where the needs are. Remember what he said about psychic powers. The ability to detect need is a very high psychic power. Now, obviously, Master DK can do this. He's well trained to do this. He knows our needs. Though the battle, as he says, is ours. He knows how to advise. He knows how to offer the energy, especially on our soul level, which will really help. But we must attend to what he says. Now, I'm sitting here after 50 years of studying Alice A. Bailey and the Tibetan, and seeing all the deficiencies in my study and application. How better use could have been made of the great treasure of the teaching. And what can one do except to make a new beginning? Today, make a new beginning. Because all of us have been deficient. And opportunity has been missed. And now, under the attack of the Lords of Form, the Lodge of Darkness, whatever any one of us can do, and whatever we can do together, those things are so sorely needed now. Great events of a subjective nature are coming up. The Great Conclave of 2025. The extension of the Threefold Teaching. And more. The entry into the Aquarian Age in 2117. Considered astronomically and technically the entrance into the Aquarian Age. We have to be alert to all of these subjective opportunities offered by the great ones and um, brought to us by Master DK, who alerts us to the possibilities. Now he says a little more here. The pressure of the work upon me has been very heavy lately. Much work has rested upon my shoulders, incident to the world situation. Well, you know, this was in terms of foresight, the master's seeing the recrudescence, the emerging of this on the physical plane of the second part of the Great War, 1914, 1945, the Great War, and the emerging of the World War II, part two of the Great War, which it could have been which could have been kept subjective. But we disciples, we failed in that, and there just wasn't enough of this will to good to keep it contained. So he says, this has involved much effort on the part of the hierarchy to prevent a complete collapse of the structure of human civilization as it exists at this time. The sound foundations of part of the structure must be saved. All else may have to go. Well, they had tremendous foresight as to what could happen. If it's the early 30s here, and he's talking about the collapse of human civilization, some pretty dire possibilities must have been in the consciousness, and not just idly so, but seen as, how does he put it, this is a possibility which can be envisioned. He was talking about a future religious war. Well, at the time this was being written, it wasn't about specifically a religious war, but many deep thinkers have looked at Nazism as if it were, in fact, yes, a kind of religion to whip into a frenzy the national devotees of the German nation, and to a lesser extent Italy and Japan. Italy apparently being the least offensive, but still part of that irrational devotionalism, this time invested in one's own country. Well, the masters accept great burdens, and Master Moria, in a familiar statement, says, "Burden me still more as I enter the beautiful garden. So there is a great spiritual hero willing to take on more and more. And this must be also true of the other masters and the ones that we're dealing with specifically in this kind of teaching, a Master KH, Master DK. And then we have to ask ourselves, what type of burdens are we willing to carry, or for that matter, capable of carrying? We can be very self-centered about our spirituality and forget what a burden it must be upon the masters who see far more and are aware of the dire circumstances that could unfold. Even now, somewhere he says, we know what will happen, but are not allowed to say, something like that. And, you know, maybe that has something to do with the climate change, which is in process, and the religious fomentation, given the narrow religious approach of so many. He goes on to say, excuse me, many things contribute to the inertia that today seems to afflict many of the disciples of the world who should be active in service and helpfulness. This applies also to you, Tamas, Rajas, Sattva. Do I feel beset by inertia, not knowing what to do and not doing it, not doing what there is to do, whether it is subjective or objective? The pressure of war conditions, as he says, now remember already, Japan and China and Italy, Ethiopia, I mean, these were precursors to the full explosion of the Second World War. The pressure of war conditions and concern over your own personal affairs, attitudes, and reactions have crowded much that I might say and have said out of your minds. So already, may we say, things were building up, and a dire future could be anticipated unless humanity took the unprecedented step of giving all that they could to the theme of the first great invocation, aligning with the forces of light. A time of tension, a time of anxiety. For those who could see what might come, it was indeed a time of anxiety. I was a very, young person born in the middle of the war. Somehow I have a memory of the relief that was felt by my parents and relatives and friends when Hitler was removed. I hear a song in my mind from a period when I was 2 years old, and it was like around and around Hitler's grave, around and around we go. I can still hear the one of those old 78 record players playing that. Maybe I didn't know what it was all about, but it impressed me. And the lightheartedness impressed me. That's the problem. We revert to a careless attitude, or what Master Moria might call light-mindedness. And he doesn't mean a mind filled with the light of the soul. It's a frivolity which would make us unprepared for the next assault of these forces of darkness. DK says that one of the first lessons which those in training for initiation have to master is that difficult dual attitude which permits right personality activity and real interest in personality affairs. And may I add, this would be a legitimate interest, not the kind of interest which is some kind of obsession with the state of one's personality, one's status, but no, an intelligent interest, real interest in personal affairs. And he goes on, and yet at the same time permits nothing personal to interfere with the subjective spiritual life, with service, and with the training given in preparation for initiation. So, a difficult dual attitude that he's talking about here. Yes, of course, we have to be like a curator. We have to be sufficiently interested in personality affairs to make it the instrument it can be and should be in the alignment of soul, mind, brain. But if we get drawn in so that it becomes most important, that preoccupation, we might call it, with personality affairs, then we have interference. The personal interfering with spiritual life, with service, and with training. given in process, in preparation for initiation. Yeah, there's going to be some good things here. We're coming up to it, but because of my schedule and Tuya's schedule, and we'll be working on this great threat, climate change, tonight. It's not going to be possible for me to go all the way to the end on this program. DK tells us, as time goes on, I shall try to bridge between the old techniques and the newer modes of training by using a part of the ancient techniques, now becoming somewhat obsolete. May I add, here he gives us a great chant that was performed in Atlantis, very old, of course, at the time of the third initiation. It's no longer presented that way. And let's see, I think on page 285 of Discipleship 2, another ancient chant, God is, it begins. And time is, space is, and so forth. Yes, now, in terms of the completeness they used to have, those ancient chants, yes, maybe they are somewhat obsolete, but they have not lost all their power and can be very useful to us. So he's a bridge, kind of makes you wonder, again, about the role of the fourth ray in his nature, as he does say, that in my work, the fourth ray mind is very important. Okay, so he tries to bridge by using a part of the ancient techniques, now becoming somewhat obsolete, and the giving of those hints which will lead you to understand the nature, purpose, and methods of educating accepted disciples, may I add, such as you are, he would be saying to certain members of his group, and eventually to all of them. The nature, purpose, and method of educating accepted disciples in the process of initiation. So, he's bridging. And maybe that gives us a hint that we too can act as bridges. The fourth ray is so very necessary, the bridging ray, to eliminate the cleavages which arise in our energy system because of incorrect attitudes. Now, he does give hints, of course. And also, he expects us to find hints on our own. He says that's one of the new ways, of course. When something really pops out at you as you read. It may be a hint for you. Okay, friends, I think the best thing I can do, this is number 44, but look, there's not that much left to page 102, and if I don't finish that in program 45, I think I'm not going to be too happy with myself. So, we'll make this the end of this program, number 44. Don't we find it interesting, the training that he's giving? Look, we're in a, or surrounding, or approaching, gathered around a training ashram, aren't we? And Master DK is the one who trains. And we've just done a little bit, but we're almost on page 100. And our next, and I hope to make it our final program on these talks to disciples, probably won't be today, on the day that's commemorating this jihad coming to the West, an ancient and primitive way of dealing with one's enemies, strictly through destruction. Think how far away is the Christ's dictum, love your enemies. Well, anybody addressing that without knowing the background would say, well, that's impossible. My enemy is my enemy. But no, love your enemies. That's hard to apply, and we have to meet the enemy as a soul and even more. Because it's not always so easy to love the brutal mistakes of an enemy's personality. So it's part of the statement, condemn the sin, but not the sinner. But we have to find who the sinner really is. Really is. And when we concentrate in that way to find the soul, the triad, the monad of the enemy, those personality mistakes do fade away. But again, as I so often say, it does take practice. And it's so easy to fall back and kind of forget yourself, you know, and revert to previous methods. reversion is so easy. And so profitless. So although this road is a tough one, let us not, or let us at least not revert. Let us see ourselves as we are, orient towards higher possibilities, think of human need, and not revert into a case where our own need becomes the most important part of our lives, or the most important focus. These seem like obvious things, but in the attempt to carry them forward comes significant challenge. So look, Tuya and I want to offer you love and many blessings, and so does every ongoing member of the communications team, BL and Joe and Michael, or Mikhail and Michael and Bob, and well, and a number of others who have helped with the virtual conferences. We're just doing what we can to bring you the opportunity to attune at a higher point of tension. So, as was so often said in the arcane school, you know, keep on keeping on, and certainly every step of the way, the Master has offered us expert advice on achieving, let us say, accepted discipleship and moving intelligently and with increasing love towards the initiation which looms before us, as initiations do for every true disciple. All right, I'm going now to sign off on this program, and we'll find a time to finish off this section one with program 45. Lots of love from all of us. We'll see you later.